Back into session, and this is agenda item number four. It's an update on cannabis cultivation waste discharge regulatory program, and I'll call, before I call on staff, I had a board member who wanted to make a very brief statement, and I'll call on board member Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's because this issue has been before us now for some time and is ongoing. And obviously, I think all of us as board members are out in the community, and it is no secret that we are looking at what we are looking at. And the question comes up, why are you doing that? Why, at one level, why are you facilitating the potential federal felony in the North Coast, in a national forest, et cetera? And I think it deserves just a small recognition that as an individual, and I think as a board, we would prefer that the issue of cannabis, of pot, had never come to us. But it is here. It is ubiquitous. It is part of our society. It is out there. And so the question is, do we stick our head in the sand and make as though this doesn't happen, that this isn't here, which there are those who I think who might ask that we do that, or do we do the best with it that we can? And because we're interested in the environment of the North Coast, what I think many of us are saying, certainly I am saying, is that my job as a board member here is to make the best for the environment of the North Coast of California that I can. To ignore the problem is insane. It doesn't go away that way. So what are we doing? We are doing the best we can with the real world that we are presented with. And in that sense, I have a support for the staff and its position. But it is, again, if I had my druthers, it would never happen. But we are here. And so with that, Mr. Chair, said as a prelude, I would ask that we hear from our staff. Okay.
I have just one small qualifier, and that's the attorney in me. We most certainly are not aiding or abetting a commission of a federal felony. And so I'll just sort of treat that as misspoke yourself on trying to make a great point. And what we're trying to do is ensure water quality regulations apply to all equally and fairly. And with that, we'll call on staff to begin.
Thank you. I'll try all this juggling here and see what works best. I'm Diana Henriel, engineer with your staff. And we are on item four. I'll read it again. Update on the development of Region 1's regulatory program for the discharge of waste associated with cannabis cultivation.
Board members, is that okay if we turn that light off for ease of viewing?
When last we discussed cannabis with you, this was at the May board meeting, you got news items from our state board liaison, Mr. Stephen Moore, and from Executive Officer Matt St. John. There were a lot of things in the works at that point. We were anticipating new staff and resources for the upcoming fiscal year. Our staff was working on the beginnings of a draft order. We were getting to work on trying to put together contracts for the recently approved cleanup and abatement account funds for our projects with the Eel River Recovery Project and the Mendocino County RCD. We had a couple of promising proposals for 319 projects in the South Fork Eel related to temperature and in-stream flow, and those did subsequently get approved, so we're working on putting together grant agreements now for those. We had committed to giving you an update later in the year on our draft order in particular, and here we are. Quite a bit has happened since May, so I'm going to give you a quick summary of recent developments throughout the program, and then a more detailed overview of our conditional order that we've been working on for the past several months, and finally a little bit, my crystal ball, where we're planning to go or expecting to go next. Anticipating the funding that and staff allocations that we were told we were going to get with this now current fiscal year, the water boards and the Department of Fish and Wildlife needed to put together a strategy as to how we were going to use that funding, what we expect our program is going to look like statewide, and what we hope to accomplish, and some performance objectives and deliverables and schedules. So the Office of Enforcement, Chris Kerrigan, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife took the lead on that and put together a plan with input from our region and Region 5 describing efforts in three areas. The three-pronged approach that we've discussed with you before, including regulatory program development, education and outreach, and enforcement. We have mentioned in previous presentations that Region 1 has been far more involved than other regions in regulating, enforcing, investigating, publicizing, and otherwise trying to address the impacts associated with marijuana cultivation over recent years. So Region 5 and the state board are building new programs, more or less, with the marijuana resources, and we're scaling up a program we already had in place or had envisioned with more resources. So that's exciting. It's also intimidating. We are kind of leading the pack, and we keep being reminded that there are, the other regions in the state board are kind of looking to us at what we're doing, and what we develop will probably serve as a model or a guide for other regions and the state board. So as hoped for, we did get new resources this fiscal year in the form of a one-year allotment, providing four new staff each for Regions 1 and 5, as well as new staff to the Office of Enforcement and the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I wish we could move more quickly on that, knowing that we were going to get the resources, we got them. Great, we've got new staff. It's still it's kind of an involved process to advertise for and then interview and actually get staff in place. So we've been interviewing for three of our positions. We've made an offer on the ES position, and I understand it was just accepted. Yay! And we're getting close to making offers on the EG position and probably one of the WRCE positions as well. So we're getting there. We're close. Once we have staff in place, our staff will need a certain amount of training. So it will be a little while yet before we can deploy our full team in the field, but we could be working on regulatory program development and education and outreach in the meantime. Funding currently only goes through the end of the fiscal year, June 30th, 2015, so we're a bit uncertain about how the program is going to go after that, but efforts are underway to secure funding to extend the program until we can become self-funding through our regulatory program with enrollment and annual fees, which I'll mention again as I'm going through the regulatory program overview. With respect to enforcement, there's not too much new news here. We're continuing to participate in task force meetings, to attend some task force inspections. We're working on some ongoing cases. We've initiated a few new cases, and there's a few that we've been out in the field, but they need further investigation before we can decide if we're going to follow up on them. Chris Kerrigan with the Office of Enforcement has been talking to boards of supervisors and sheriffs in several counties in both our region and Region 5 to learn about their current task forces and marijuana enforcement programs and discuss ways we can work together with our increased program resources. We'll be having further discussions as we're closer to actually having those staff in place. With respect to education and outreach, as we've mentioned or presented to you before, we have a couple of relevant contracts and grants under development that we expect may help us to develop or disseminate education and outreach materials and messages about water conservation, water quality protection, and best management practices. Unfortunately, the contracting, the cleanup and abatement account funds, contracting has run into some hitches, and it's been taking a while, and so we're not quite there yet. I'm hoping that some or all of our projects will be executed soon, and we can start to report progress, maybe at our next update. Stormer's been involved in a few interviews with the press and spoken to a few different groups, and Chris Kerrigan and staff from Region 5 have met with stakeholder representatives from around the state, including some from our region, about regulatory program concepts and other issues. We've got several meetings next week with Humboldt County, in Humboldt County. Matt and I and Chris will be participating in a panel next week in Humboldt for the North Coast Resource Partnership. And Chris is on a kind of a three-day education and outreach tour up there. He's going to be speaking with the Board of Supervisors and radio interview and other engagements. We've been intermittently meeting with some of our stakeholder representatives. One of our representatives is here, Julia Carrera, today, with the small farmers of Mendocino County. And we're looking forward to engaging a little more actively with them as soon as our draft order is ready to share with them. So we have something now. We're close to having something very specific to discuss, which is nice. And that brings us to the main topic at hand, our draft regulatory program. Over the past several months, Stormer, Samantha, and I have been working on building a draft conditional waiver with input from Matt. More recently, we've shared a little more widely in our, we've shared this draft a little more widely in our office and with Chris Kerrigan and with staff at Region 5, getting positive feedback, which is great. We've discussed it conceptually with State Board staff, and we're just getting ready to share it now with the Statewide Water Boards Task Force that includes representatives from various departments in the State Water Board, as well as several of the regions. We're also putting together a more detailed version of the overview that's in your EOSR to share with our stakeholders, both regulated and regulatory community, so we can start a substantive discussion with them about the contents, components, and concepts in our program. So we have a lot of details to discuss and decide upon, but we are pretty happy with what we have so far. And here's some of the highlights. Our regulatory program will apply to persons cultivating marijuana on private lands, and it will include conditions and provisions for site development, maintenance, operations, and cleanup as applicable. It doesn't relieve the need for other appropriate permits, either from us or from other agencies. People conducting similar types of activities on their properties, some other type of agricultural enterprise not involving marijuana cultivation, may opt to enroll under and meet the conditions of this waiver also. And the disclaimer, we are regulating the discharge of waste associated with the activity rather than the activity itself. This is not a permit to grow marijuana. We get into the shorthand of saying marijuana permit, but we're regulating the discharge of waste. Conditions. The draft order is conditional with specific conditions that apply to all sites where marijuana is being cultivated. The conditions cover many aspects, including site grading and drainage, stream crossings, roads, soil handling, soil amendments, fertilizers, pesticides, water use, petroleum storage, refuse or garbage storage and handling and disposal, human waste handling and disposal, and others. Did I get ahead of myself? No, I didn't. Okay. We're proposing a multiple-tier structure with sites falling into a given tier based on site conditions, characteristics, or other criteria. The waiver includes specific requirements for sites and operations under each tier. Most cultivation sites will fall into one of two tiers, with tier one being those that present a lower threat to water quality, tier two being those that present a higher threat to water quality. The criteria that will determine which tier a site belongs under will include various site characteristics such as slope and proximity to water courses, site development characteristics such as total area of soil disturbance, and operational characteristics such as number of plants or amount of daily water usage. The criteria and the specific numbers that will determine where we draw the line between tier one and two are issues we would like to discuss with our various stakeholders before we make a final decision and a recommendation to you on this. At present, what we're proposing is that tier one dischargers must meet the conditions, but they will not be required to enroll or pay a fee. But we will encourage those dischargers to self-certify and contact our staff to review their site and confirm that they meet tier one criteria and are meeting the conditions under the waiver or have a plan to do so. Tier two dischargers would be required to comply with the conditions and to enroll for coverage under our program, pay an annual fee, and develop and submit a water quality protection plan for site development and operations. New site development of an acre or more would also require enrollment under the state's general construction stormwater permit, and we would require that enrollees submit to us a copy of their stormwater pollution prevention plan. We've seen that third parties can be very helpful in implementing non-point source regulatory programs. We know there are groups that are interested in working with us in this manner. We've been talking to some of them. I mentioned the small farmers of Mendocino County. There's the Emerald Growers of Humboldt County. maybe others that we haven't met or engaged with yet. We will need to spend some time getting to know their programs well and see whether, where, and how they can best help us with the effort. Our waiver also identifies a third tier, which applies to sites that have been developed for the purposes of cultivation and which may or may not have cultivation operations underway, but which have conditions which require cleanup and abatement. Specifically, we're talking about sites where streams or wetlands have been filled or where site development has resulted in conditions representing an imminent threatened discharge to receiving waters. We run into plenty of sites where developed features can be modified or BMPs can be applied to correct drainage or erosion problems, but we also encounter a lot of sites where something's been built, moved, piled, or placed in such a way that it must be removed to prevent or correct water resource impacts. Tier 3 sites have conditions that constitute a language from our water code here, a condition, a discharge or threatened discharge of waste into waters of the state that creates or threatens to create a condition of pollution or nuisance, and these conditions are subject to enforcement actions. The waiver builds in requirements for such sites, the draft order builds in requirements for such sites, directing owners or operators to develop and submit a site restoration or cleanup plan for our review and approval to be followed by implementation under our oversight. These properties must also comply with the standard conditions, and as applicable, cleanup plans must include information and schedule about any necessary work to bring the site into compliance with the conditions. People may opt to cultivate on the site during or following cleanup and restoration activities, and in that case, they'd also be subject to Tier 2 requirements. We've got a ways to go before the waiver is ready for board consideration and adoption, but as we're developing it, and also as we're working in the field with dischargers through our enforcement efforts, we'll be sharing information about the waiver under development and the anticipated conditions and other requirements to educate and inform growers and help them with early implementation. Once the waiver or other order is adopted, we'll probably spend some time focusing on compliance assistance and helping people to get enrolled in the program, and then we'll gradually move into more of an enforcement mode as needed for those sites that have not been enrolled or are not complying with conditions. And in parallel to this, we'll be continuing our task force complaint response and enforcement inspection program, and we'll coordinate the regulatory program implementation with the enforcement program to help provide incentives for enrollment. In all of this, staff safety is of primary concern. In addition to all the usual field hazards our staff encounter regularly, there are potentially more chemical hazards at some grow sites, and there's certainly a more dangerous human element at some of these sites than we routinely encounter. All our cannabis team staff will be getting appropriate OSHA health and safety training. State Board and staff and I are looking into something. We're hoping maybe we can get a 40-hour OSHA course that's tailored to the hazards we might encounter at grow sites. And also, as noted on the slide here, we're very concerned about the human element risk. We don't trespass. We seek landowner permission before visiting a site. And in an enforcement or warrant entry, we always go in the company of law enforcement personnel. There's obviously still many issues to sort out as we discuss our draft order, this approach with state and regional water board colleagues, and then begin working with our wider community of stakeholders. Some of the most significant issues include deciding what a good water quality protection plan looks like. We know there's a lot of good examples under other non-point source programs that we implement, and some of our stakeholders may have developed some good templates as well, and we'd like to find some we can recommend or draw from to build kind of a recommended or suggested plan. Other issues include how much new site development we will or can cover under this program, timeframes for enrollment, plan submittals, site restoration cleanups, et cetera, identifying and certifying potential third-party programs to assist us with implementing various elements of the program, figuring out the enrollment requirements and fee schedule, and of course, I already mentioned, identifying the characteristics that represent a low-threat site versus a higher threat site. What's a tier one versus a tier two site? That's some of the major issues, and we are really looking forward to taking this out and starting to really get to work on it. with the stakeholders. And that leads me to the end of the story and on to where we think we're going next with this. I mentioned that we're going to be sharing this with Water Board Task Force members and sharing a detailed overview with our stakeholders. I'm hoping we can reach consensus in our Water Board's group in the next several weeks and then have a draft order we can bring to our stakeholders. And from there, it is kind of the crystal ball. I don't know how the process is going to go once we start working with the stakeholders, but I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to bring you a draft order for your consideration by mid-next year. And ideally, it would be before the end of the fiscal year, and then we would have that progress to report to the legislature and the governor as they're considering the budget for next year. But I think we'll be pretty close anyway, and we'll be updating you along the way. We'll also be working on efforts to staff up and scale up the enforcement, education, and outreach parts of the program, which is moving pretty quickly right now, you know, with the 3 days next week and all the meetings that we're planning now. It's I could report weekly on progress, but we'll be giving you EOSRs updates in the written material for your agendas over the next few months, and then probably coming back again in 3 months or so at the pleasure of the board, and you know, whenever you want to see us again. And with that,
okay,
this presentation ends.
Thank you. Any board member questions or comments? Yes.
Yep. Thanks, Diana.
Thank you.
Set. Okay. It seems like it's a good structure to regulate discharge. So mm-hmm. site development and discharge, that's, in my mind, it's a big problem, but the other, it's half the problem. The other half of the problem is maintaining surface water flows and water withdrawals.
Yes.
So who are we, not seeing it in this permit framework, who are we relying on to enforce that, and how does this permit, I mean, they have to work together. So what's the mechanism for that?
That's part of what we want to talk about with the state and regional board task force. First, we would like to include conditions for water use and water conservation. We are discussing now with state and other regional boards how much authority we have to include that and how we might address that if we can't include it.
It seems that we would have through if. I think the most common diversion and the easiest diversion is surface water, and that's
sure.
clearly been demonstrated in our region as being the most significant impact to
mm-hmm.
fish in the summertime, particularly in cold water tributaries, and cumulatively as you work your way down into the main stem. It seems we would have much more authority if there's a groundwater source,
mm-hmm.
and particularly with some of the new legislation in groundwater management and where we're going with that. I don't know how readily we'd be able to do that, but it seems that we have a little bit of ground to stand on
mm-hmm.
with that. So I'm interested to hear how that happens, because it's clearly a big component
yeah.
of the problem. And
absolutely.
Yeah. But hey, thanks.
Thank
Otherwise,
you.
Looking good.
Okay.
Good member Gusty.
Thank you, Diana, for a thorough overview. This may sound harsh, and I don't mean it to be, but I think it's naive to think that it will not, this program will not be interpreted as a permit to grow marijuana. I think that's exactly how it will be interpreted. And following up on Member Hale's questions about water diversions, that is a major concern of mine, as we've been focusing on managing water discharges and pollutants associated with discharge. But essentially, it's the removal of water from the system to grow this product that is also equally important and needs to be addressed. And I worry about recognizing that surface water is going to be extracted to grow a federally illegal crop, which is potentially impacting a federally listed species. And we cannot issue incidental take permits from the federal government to people that want to extract surface water. So the complexity of all of this, and I totally agree with what Board Member Massey said. We can't ignore the reality of the situation. My concern is, though, because we're leading the pack. We're going to get attention. We're going to generate a lot of interest and discussion. I worry that we're getting seduced by the provocative nature of this path forward, and that we're losing sight of what it is we're actually going to encourage people to do, which is to continue removing water and continuing to push the envelope on a commodity that is not recognized by the services that are whose job it is to protect these endangered species. So I have my fingers crossed. I want to do something, but as I shared with people last night at dinner, I'm very uncomfortable that the approach we're taking, and just as 215 was somewhat vague and kind of opened the floodgates to cannabis production, I don't want to follow suit and put out something there that gives people tacit approval to go out and continue practices that we know have been detrimental to the environment. So I wish you well, but as I've shared with other members of staff and board, I'm not there yet. I'm not comfortable with the approach. For example, when you talked about, you list the conditions for roads, a county like Mendocino has no road standards outside of timber practice. So are we going to develop road standards for these counties or jurisdictions that don't have them? I think it's easy to put up a list and think about what we want to do, but again, being who I am and being where I come from, I know there's a lot more detail and work that has to go into these so that people have a clear understanding of what their requirements are. But as Member Hale said, we're just looking at half the picture, looking at discharge, and I'm concerned about still removing water from the system. Okay. So I'm just trying to be honest and upfront with everybody, and so nobody's surprised if my tone continues for the duration of this discussion.
Absolutely, and the discussion will be continuing regularly.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thanks for those comments, by the way, Board Member Giusti. We recently went to the Water Quality Coordinating Committee at State Board, and this came up time and again. This is not unique to Region 1. This is everywhere throughout the state. Clearly, this is something that is magnified during drought conditions. It's also magnified by economics. It's magnified by a lot of pieces and parts. We are and continue to be on the front end of this as a region that is known for a product that is consumed worldwide, sometimes with great effect out there. Let me ask you a couple questions. How much from the standpoint of the regulatory program itself, is there a goal that's explicitly put out about what are we talking about? How much of the universe of this activity are we trying to capture? And do we realistically think we're going to capture? Because there's a certain element of this activity that's just going to be off the grid. And what do we do about the stuff off the grid? I realize that the permitting's one leg of the stool. We have the continued enforcement, not only by us, by other agencies as well. But how much is this realistically going to capture, do you kind of project at this point?
I know what you're asking. But I'll say it's intended to cover discharges of waste from marijuana cultivation on private property, non-trespass.
And we heard before too that federal lands, which include a good portion of Region 1, it's flat out illegal.
It's illegal
to do that. And we heard from, I believe, Bureau of Reclamation, if I'm correct about that, last year about that.
Right.
As it goes on the education side, the money that the cleanup and abatement money, which I believe you touched on, Eel River Recovery Program, did that get going this year? Is that going now?
That's the contracting hitches. A lot of different difficulties. We made it through getting an approval from DGS for a non-competitive bid, but then the Eel River Recovery Project themselves ran into some problems with liability insurance requirements and the cost of that. They have found a way to, I think they found a better offer for insurance, but I haven't heard back from them yet on whether they want to continue, because it has taken so long to get to this point.
Yeah, it does.
There was, all of us, a lot of frustration.
Well, and I think if there's ever a year that education and outreach and some reach out would have actually really helped, this could have very well been it.
But I think this also is making a lot more people more aware of why there is a need for conservation. So I think there's still good, you know, good potential if we can get it going.
Yes, and I think I view this as an opportunity. I recognize the potential pitfalls of this permit, and I still struggle to understand it as well.
Yeah.
And it is in development. I realize it's a draft permit at this point. One request I would have is before a public draft goes out of this agency, I believe that we ought to have a briefing with board members and a discussion internally before that happens.
Yeah.
So that we have, you have a board here that I think is willing to go forward from what I hear on this, but I think there's great concern about how we do so in a public way.
Sure.
And you have always been very good at coming and going through us and having that conversation. In this instance, explicitly, I think that's really needed. It sounds like you're on a good path, and this isn't something that's brand new. This is something, or it's not unique to us either. This is certainly an issue that is big and growing. At the same time, I recognize, by the way, that the political and social winds are changing, and so it's a very interesting. This is a very interesting condition that I think is subject to change in the future.
Yes.
And it's going to be a process of discovery about how a permit actually could work here.
Yeah. No, we've been seeing the impacts for years and recognizing that it's our charge to protect water quality and beneficial uses. We need to acknowledge that it's there and, you know, without endorsing it, say we'd like to see this being done more responsibly with our waters. So whatever way this goes, being legalized, you know, however soon or however much, I think this is really important to do.
I do, too. Thank you very much, Diana. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make some comments. First of all, it seems to me we're close to repeating the mistakes of Mendocino County, which I thought had a pretty good program.
Sure.
But they never checked in with the Department of Justice. And since then, of course, Department of Justice guidelines from the Obama administration have changed. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I'm proposing is to set up a phone call or a meeting with Melissa Haig, who I've dealt with on this issue more than you might ever imagine, and have Stephen Moore from the State Board either participate personally or a designated representative, and someone from the regional board, because if we don't get conceptual approval there, then what will happen is you may have a successful program and all the records are subpoenaed and it all goes up into smoke. So that was one of the errors that I hope this process would avoid. In thinking it through, I realized that's above the, and I don't mean this in an insulted way, but the state would be shocked if you went and called Melissa Haig, and I think I can get away with it that I'm a know-nothing board member, and then, of course, Stephen Moore has the right pay grade for that. I think I'm going to exercise that, and
sure.
I'm actually thinking there will probably be at least three meetings throughout the process because that's critical. The second thing is, throughout it, I've been very firm that I have not signed off on labeling this a marijuana waste discharge permit, and I'll give something this conceptual, so I don't want to blow the room out, and obviously it could be worked on, but if we have a recitation, we have a wine ag permit, we have a grazing permit, we have a dairy permit,
yes.
Then mention there can be the category
up, yeah.
Standard legal crops to be announced low priority, in other words, we're not anticipating any regulation, and then all other ag to try and capture this. Although you have to be careful with the criteria, then you don't even have to mention the word marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
It will require, like I said, a whole different set of players. So one of them is on large greenhouses, do the counties have permits for them or not? If the counties have permits for them and they're unpermitted, I think that ought to go into our criteria for ratcheting up. And that type of thing. So I'll try and send a memo. I don't care whether it goes in the public record or not. I did want to say in Tier 1, where it's for discharges who do not directly divert surface water during the summer period, a lot of the country parcels, you know, where they don't have a community water district, so they get their water sometimes from wells, but very often from the surface diversions, and that would almost make that Tier 1 meaningless. I mean, no one would qualify for. So I think we need to rework on exactly how we're approaching that, you know, so that
we encounter
otherwise we just got a tier two and three on the table, just at a practical kind of administrative level.
Sure, but not every property has a water course running through it.
Right, I understand, but I'm trying to say, at least in the neighborhoods that I've been into in the rural areas,
sure,
that's where they get their water, either from a class one stream or from the rivers.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you do have our springs that flow somewhere. You do have groundwater wells. There's no doubt.
Yes.
It's a big, very diverse world. But I'm trying to say, if you want people in tier one, it's got to be big enough home to have people actually.
Right. And all of that is subject to change. In giving examples, we're saying it's the natural characteristics of the site itself undeveloped, and then the characteristics of the development, how they developed it, and how much of it, and then how the operation is playing out on the ground and in interacting with the water resources.
Right.
But we're going to be talking a lot to the stakeholders that represent people that do want to enroll. We're going to be doing a lot more enforcement inspections at the same time through the task force. So we're going to have a better idea of, we have an idea of what our universe is, but hopefully we'll have a more refined one.
Right.
Of answering Mr. Noren's question of how many people do we think? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I want to thank you for your work. We're sort of off the Star Trek going where no one's ever gone before.
Exactly.
So I hope we can be very relaxed and not get into ownership issues. The other thing, the way it's designed right now and tied to law enforcement, and that's tied to staff security, then you're down to approximately 1% of the grows. That's all law enforcement can do.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I don't think that will work. And what I had proposed was not boots on the ground, but you can use Google Earth for a lot of gathering, and where you can send letters and target, and that will almost automatically hit the larger growers, which have the higher impact. And if you look what's worked, Humboldt County taxes, Constitution, you can't tax an agricultural crop, but they can tax the greenhouses, and they do. They don't give that, but they do it all aerially. And I think without an aerial component, that's critical to making this work. It's also more economical. So I think you're going to have to go back to that, and then it's also to mailing lists off the parcel. So in one sense, I think you can do more 2 days in the office than months out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So what I see is the state board staff originally started off with quite a bit modification of the existing enforcement program. I'm all for it, it just doesn't work. We tried to get a little bit boots off the ground to deal with the staff safety issue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing that sort of eroding step by step, and we're sort of going back to a program I don't think will work. And it's gonna be very challenging for someone to invite law enforcement on, because there's a plain sight exception as far as getting a search warrant. So I think what's worked have been the entities and the counties that have done it on objective criteria, not directly related to marijuana growing. For example, if we have a county permit process for greenhouses and you have 300-yard-long greenhouses, then that seems to me, and you can establish that by photograph, that's really a group that should enroll. If there's a large clearing and we check with Cal Fire and there's been no permit to clear or convert, then that's a criterion. I think if we take that kind of approach to using existing Google, we get out of boots on the ground and we can be quite effective. Then lastly, I wanted to go, there is the element, and it's increasingly being used by law enforcement, of charging for environmental damage when they go out on the 1% that they do raid. I believe that's a key component of our program. We ought to make sure that water quality is getting a fair share so that we can spend it on the environment. But that is not going, we know that doesn't work as far as the bigger picture. So I think that ought to be a separate component, and we definitely should make sure our agency gets a fair share of funds, but it's not a program. It's like winning the lottery about You know, only 0.2 of those 1% are even prosecuted, so you're down to 0.2%. And some of those don't have money, so, you know, you're probably down to 0.1%. But still, you want it set up. It occasionally pays money, and we can use it to deal with funding the program. So that's my basic thought. I'll try and get those in writing to you.
Thank you.
But I do think we need to have it at the first instance civil based upon detriments to water supply or water quality. I know I've gone back and forth with Samantha on whether we've got to have the word marijuana in it. We may continue to
cannabis.
Go back and forth on that. But those are mine. But a key concept that seems to be getting lost is we're getting back in the enforcement mode. And then you're down to 1%. And the other problem you have is, and the police have it, is they go in and they do a large bust. You do about 5 of those, and the whole police department's busy for a year in court. So one of the other characteristics of what works is trying to actually to get out of the law enforcement mode, because it's the criminal justice system has to provide justice, and it's, as a consequence, a cumbersome process. If we get caught up in that, we will not get our job done. So those are just my, and I'll try and get some written comments to you. I do want to thank you, because this is, like I said, going where no one's gone before, and it's going to be,
Exactly. Take
all our creative talents to figure out a way to make this work.
Yes, we're looking at all possibilities and you know, looking for the right path. And our program, I believe it's very important to have a strong enforcement component to our regulatory program. We're not.
Yes.
I don't think we're eroding. We're actually a little bit different from the statewide strategy, which is a much stronger. I think it's more enforcement-centric, and we're including a very strong element of education and outreach for all of the staff that are in this program.
That's certainly true from where we started out, and maybe sure. I misread the tone a little bit, but and I am not excluding enforcement under any circumstance, but I am saying that if you may, and maybe I misread the language, maybe it wasn't crafted as carefully as it could have been, but if we have that as a precondition,
I wrote it, so if there's confusion
but
or misunderstanding, if we
have that as a precondition and the only way you can do certain things, then I think it greatly limits the program. And we have proof it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I mean, Humboldt County is supposed to be the poster child of marijuana eradication, believe it or not, 20 years ago. I think despite enormous sums of money, we have pretty good empirical evidence it hasn't worked very well.
Sure.
And so it's hard to shift the paradigm, and I've seen environmental programs go down the tubes because they want to ramp up the penalties, mm-hmm. and Congressman Hoffman's been instrumental in that. I'm not faulting him. He's a great congressman, but it didn't do anything on the ground.
Yeah.
And so we'll leave that to the legislature and the federal authorities, but I think what we need to do is find how do we regulate water quality. So I'll try and
Can
send you some written comments behind this.
So a couple of things regarding your points about using all of the available tools, including aerial surveillance and imagery. So there's two contracts that were in the process of developing. We broadly, meaning us, State Board and Region 5. The first is with the Civil Air Patrol to do aerial flights and take some video imagery. Mm-hmm. The second is a contract that will use Google imagery. Then run it into a model that will have an algorithm based on slope, proximity to water course.
Good.
It actually will identify grow sites. And then we'll use that as a way of prioritizing watersheds and specific sites where we'll then work with the Environmental Crimes Task Forces to go in. So it's exactly what you're saying,
okay.
John, and we need to give credit to Clint Snyder of Region 5, the Assistant Executive Officer, to spearheading that effort. But it's something that the contract is for our region as well.
And you may want to have someone touch bases with the Coastal Commission. They've used it for years to detect illegal buildings, so they have probably the software programs already in place. And then I would talk to the Humboldt County assessor. They've been dealing with marijuana successfully longer than almost any other local government. And
Mr. Chair, this is Samantha Olson, your counsel. I just wanted to add on the boots of the on the ground idea that the third party program is also instrumental in doing the connection between the regulatory program and the people on the ground. That's a component of every ag permit that we're working on. And if I could, I just wanted to add three points quickly. One is that our stakeholders include other agencies, our sister agencies, and while they may be a little bit further behind than we are, we're working with them to incorporate to the extent we can their needs into our permits. And I did hear that Fish and Wildlife does want to do some sort of 1600. Which
I think
leads,
they're ahead of where we are.
They may be, you know, because it's
in the outreach and education component.
And we struggle with if people are complying with our program and then, you know, they get busted by two other agencies, that's not going to be, it's not going to be very effective. So we're working with them closely. And it leads me to my second point, which is the order itself is, in a sense, enforcement. So I just wanted to highlight and underscore the Tier 3, which is a cleanup component, which streamlines our ability and stormers and other people's ability to require the cleanup rather than having to turn around a draft cleanup order on every single parcel. And so I just wanted to underscore that point. It's never been done in a general permit, and I'm pretty proud of that. And lastly, I know we're calling it marijuana cultivation, but there's a provision there that's allowing for similar types of operations that would include greenhouses, and that provision partially covers some of the ag that we've left out by focusing on commodity specific. Thank you.
Okay. So do we have public comment cards? I imagine we do. And I do want to say there will be quite a lively exchange just because you have a lot of different ideas that hasn't been formulated. And like I said, it will take quite a bit of creativity for all of us working together.
Thank you.
Okay. Julie, is it Carnever?
Carrera.
I'm sorry. I'm one bad with names, and then I'm even worse at reading handwriting. You're up. Could you please approach the podium, state your name and address?
Hi. Thank you all for addressing this issue, by the way. I'm Julia Carrera. I'm a neutral third-party inspector. I was with the Mendocino County Sheriff's Department doing their inspections with their permitting program. I also represent the Small Farmers Association, which is an association of small farmers now in 8 counties. I'm doing inspections in 8 counties. My life is interesting. We started from the permittees that were in that program and have it opened up this year to any small farmer that is cultivating medical marijuana only in our closed loop system. It's the same program, we're just conducting it on a voluntary basis. I want to thank your staff and specifically Matt St. John for finally addressing this issue. We've been working with the Mendocino County Farm Bureau for several years, and when Matt came aboard, Matt actually hurt us. And so, Matt, thank you. It's important to protect our water, specifically in this day and age and this economy. I wanted to let you know that the Small Farmers Association is prepared to work with your board, your staff. I've been meeting with Chris Kerrigan in any capacity to help make this work. We're also working with the Police Chiefs Association this year in drafting a new bill to regulate medical marijuana, and I want to say I think it's very, very, very important that we look at two types of farms. One is a medical marijuana farm, and one is not a medical marijuana farm. Legalization is pending in the state of California. 2016 quite possibly could be the year. It will happen eventually. Our farmers do not engage. We're neutral on that subject. But Mr. Corbett, thank you for everything that you said. The enforcement aspect of it is a challenge. I sat with the police chiefs and League of Cities, brought in our undersheriff who ran our program, and because all he does is enforcement. We're holding hearings right now in our county on 25 plant gardens with people that don't comply. There is no way to wrap anyone's arms around the totality of what's going on in this state and across the country in regards to marijuana. I'd like to quote Captain Randy Johnson's statements to the Police Chief Association. The best thing we can do is regulate, and the people that come forward to regulate make sure that they are not diverting marijuana illegally. That's really the only way we can come at this. And I encourage this board to recognize what I just said and possibly look at it a little more. I don't know what to call it, but we're all facing it, and I wish you all luck in the process, and thank you. Thank you for not putting your heads in the sand.
Okay, thank you. Mark Baer, Jefferson Committee.
Morning, everybody. Mark Baer. I'd just like to say that making the declarative statement that you're not aiding and abetting a federal crime is a little bit of fantasy. If you have direct knowledge of crimes being committed and you don't actively stop that crime, you are aiding and abetting. And if you receive monies as a result of that crime, you're also aiding and abetting. I think that you're absolutely right, Mr. Corbett. This is a minefield. I think to stick your head in the sand is counterproductive. I think the statement that we're here, what else can we do? That's pretty much what all the Germans said in the Nuremberg war crimes trials. This is an illegal activity. I think to separate small farmers from the Sinaloa cartel, and I have some law enforcement experience, is dreaming. I mean, a lot of people who are engaged in this activity are doing it illegally. They know it's illegal. They're not going to comply with any water quality standards. They're not going to comply with any permitting standards. Enforcement is either the way or legislation. Either legalize the thing or don't legalize it, but act accordingly. I don't think this is a fence the people of California can ride. And the people in Colorado and Seattle are seeing property crimes go up. They're seeing vehicular accidents go up as a result of this marijuana. These things aren't good, but that's not a decision that we can make on a regulatory basis. This has to be addressed on a legislative basis. This stuff has to be legal or it has to be illegal. If it's illegal, enforce the illegality of it. If it's legal, now you have an opening for your permit process. And once again, in this particular instance, I would not want to be sitting in your shoes. Thank you.
Thank you for your sympathy. Right. Susan Corm.
I'm Susan Corm. I'm the water quality coordinator with the Creek Tribe. And I'd actually like to say that I think this is very timely. We're starting to have discussions as well with the Creek Tribe about doing monitoring for marijuana cultivation, like monitoring for pesticides and rodenticides, and also getting involved with environmental cleanup efforts. And more I talk to people, everybody is starting to focus their attention on this. So I don't know how you guys could not be working on it. I think it's great that your staff is working on it. And I encourage them to do that. What Samantha said about that they're going to be requiring cleanup, highly supportive of that, because that's the biggest issue we're having. As you know, Creek Aboriginal Territory is mostly federal land. So when I was talking to your staff last night, I realized they don't have enforcement action on federal lands. But what we're hearing from the LEOs, the law enforcement officers on the Klamath National Forest in regards to cleanup, pot, getting the marijuana out of there is their priority. And so that's what the time is really spent on. He estimated about 80% of the time they actually follow the water line to the creek. They'll cut the water lines up or remove them, and then they'll reconnect the water way to the rest of the water, so we'll actually get the water going directly back into the tributaries. Only about 60% of the time in our area is there any environmental cleanup happening. So that means we have trash, we have big bags of pesticides, fertilizer, rodenticides are being left out to damage our ecosystem and make our world unhealthy out there. That part of it's not okay. And I realize what a lot of that is the LEOs, they get separate funding from the environmental cleanup. The environmental cleanup funding actually goes through the forest itself. So what we're working on right now is putting together a meeting between the tribes, Siskiyou County. I was just talking with Grace earlier. We're going to have their natural resources representative attend. I imagine Humboldt County as well. And we're going to get this meeting together because we really want to help bring in money and be involved in the environmental cleanup processes out there. I would also like to be working with your staff as they develop this policy, particularly in regards to how they're going to go about doing the cleanup effort, who we're all working with, you know, where people are getting money from, those kind of things. And actually, if, you know, we can get our staff trained and involved in the OSHA trainings that you guys are doing, if there's ways to overlap with that, I know EPA can do those kind of trainings. We would love to get people trained up because this issue isn't going anywhere. Even if it's legalized, we're still going to have people bringing chemicals into our watersheds and making the waters not healthy. So we'd like to be highly involved with that. So far, we've been working as far as the water quality monitoring. I'd like to work with your swamp people and try to figure out, you know, really what the constituents they're looking for in the water, the best ways to sample. We've already had discussions with USGS, HOOPA, UROC, UC Davis. We're working with Humboldt State University. As I said, everybody is gaining interest in this right now in the last year. So we want to be working with all of these agencies, the universities on this issue, and really helping maybe make sure people can build capacity. Because wouldn't it be great if we could have Humboldt State Chemistry Lab decides that they really want to prioritize being able to do this kind of research. Right now, the only people that are really processing these samples that I've heard of is the Rancho Cordova Fish Health Lab. So we need to have more places where we can be sending these samples to. We all need to be monitoring for the same things, standardizing our methodology so that this can be comparable. We can all figure out how bad the severity levels across the board. I think that's pretty much covers.
Well, I encourage you to work with our staff, and if you write them something in writing, send a CC to the board.
Okay.
So we can get the benefit of your comments.
And it's also, we're really excited to help with this because it seems that funding is a huge issue, and one thing that we're really good at is finding funding for places. So.
And then the Karuk tribe would have, by ordinance, certainly authority over allotted lands and tribal trust lands to regulate, and I know some tribes have taken that approach to zero tolerance. So
right. Of course, most of ours is federal, so we have concerns like where people came in and they clear cut and they take the water and they add all this stuff. So
yes, some of the growers do not follow rules. That's so true.
Anyway, that's what we're going to be working on. We look forward to working with your staff and hope you guys keep working on this, even though it sounds like it might need to change the way you do your policy. We're supportive of working with your staff on these issues in the future.
Thank you for your time. John Menke, Siskiyou County landowner.
I had to make a comment. I actually put a...
Please state your name.
Yeah, John Menke, M-E-N-K-E, rancher, 21 years in Siskiyou County, professor at Davis and Berkeley for 25 years prior to that. I actually got on Matt St. John's case a little bit. When are you guys going to do something? We have friends in the Hoopa Square that had all the pesticide damage, and I with all the spurious type of things that we're trying to be done in TMDL with these site-specific problems, I thought something ought to be happening. But now I appreciate the problem you're in right now. I wanted to share a couple of things. I wasn't even aware of what's called the Green Triangle, which I'm sure John Corbett is fully aware of that terminology referring to the North Coast region. But we actually have two people adjacent to our ranch in Quartz Valley that... one of whom vacated Weaverville for marijuana reasons, and the other one, though, is a direct neighbor to our property. And I made the mistake a year ago dumping a yard and a quarter of very nice composted bull manure over the fence line from our our runway where we bring our cattle in to our working chutes and things. And you wouldn't believe the way his marijuana grows this year with some good compost and bull manure compared to whatever he had before. And now I put two and two together. 3 years ago, I offered bull manure to a neighbor across the street. And in fact, that grew into a situation where her son from over in Sawyer's Bar came over for a pickup load, taking it back over on the Salmon River to grow it very likely over there. So this is a really sticky problem, and our neighbor, after the one that's immediately next to us, who's growing very robust marijuana now, he had to show me his two AK-47s a couple of years ago, and I reported that to our sheriff. And then most recently, I helped him get a contractor that we had used to raise his house and put a new foundation under it, and that contractor, without me giving him any forewarning from me, recognize this guy's schizophrenic. Well, we're getting exports from the Green Triangle in the Siskiyou County of trouble, specifically tied to marijuana. And the most striking thing is, though, is you've got to get into the medical profession. We actually have an MD. I don't know the person's name, but my supervisor for District 5 has told me we have an MD in Happy Camp that sets up a cardboard table giving out marijuana permits. Now, how can he do a medical? My father was a surgeon, damn good one, in Sacramento. How can he make a reading on whether this guy needs guy or gal needs marijuana for their health problem? So we've got corruption at the medical level in medical licensing in the state of California for these permits. So I appreciated that last person's comment. We've got other boards and agencies in the medical profession that got to get involved with this medical marijuana. But, of course, the whole plan is to get right on to recreational marijuana as soon as possible. So it's just a sorry situation, and I appreciate your problem.
Thank you for your comments.
Hey, John, be careful with your compost. Mark will get you on aiding and abetting.
Yeah. Okay, I believe that concludes the public comment. Any further last-minute board comments? I just have one. I just want to say a lot of people have failed at what we're attempting to do, and if we fail, we're in great company. And then if we succeed, we really push the ball down the court in a favorable way. So I'm not afraid of failing just because I think we need to try. So. Okay, the next one is item number 5.